talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is April the 18th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing great.
Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing lovely.
All right, good to hear it. Yeah. What happened at the top 10 over the weekend, Michelle? Was it
I think
Criminal? Did Kevin Costner?
I think Hardcore Henry made a comeback and got to the number one spot.
I know. I was really hoping that.
Yes, how many times have you seen
the nauseating?
Yeah. Comscore sent us their top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates for Sunday, April 17th. The Jungle Book took the number one spot with $103.6 million.
Oh,
103. Directed by Jon Favreau, Disney's extraordinary 3D adventure film captivated audiences and brought a mighty roar to the box office as the exhilarating motion picture generated approximately 43% of its domestic opening weekend gross on 3D equipped screens.
Oh, yeah. Well, the 3D is very good. Yeah. I'm wondering if that's like a new April opening record.
I'm so glad you asked. Okay. I'm going to get to that. Real D 3D accounted for an estimated $31 million of the weekend's total domestic box office. A sequel has already been greenlit, and it now ranks as the second biggest April opening in history, behind only Furious 7's $147.2 million bow. It's doing well with critics and sits at 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the film had a reported $175 million production price tag. So there's your number one.
Weekend. Did you say how it was doing internationally, too? I mean, did you say the combined total there? Or do you have that?
That was for domestic.
That was for 103 domestic. Yeah. 103 probably another at least 150 international, you think?
Yeah, they didn't send international. It was just the what it did here in the U.S. But
so it'll combined. Turn a profit by the end of the month sure.
Definitely. Coming in at number two was Barbershop, The Next Cut. Warner Brothers film came in at $20.2 million in its opening weekend from 2,661 theaters.
Jim reviewed that, didn't you?
I did. I think I better give it a 2 out of 5 or something like that.
It was up in the 80s, up in the Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, but I checked it. They only had about 45 reviews posted, so it's not a lot. Yeah, not a lot of reviews out there of it.
All right, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Women comprise 54% of ticket buyers who went out to see the third film in the series. The Boss, starring Melissa McCarthy, was number three with $10.2 million, bringing its domestic total to $40.3 million. It dropped off 57% in its second weekend.
Still surprising to be in the top three, so that's pretty strong,
And like we said last week, she deserves
her fans.
And I think she deserves better writing and maybe joining more with Paul Feig.
Well, it's that Paul Feig can only do so many movies,
True. But I'm still looking forward to them doing Ghostbusters this summer.
I saw the new trailer for that at the theaters this weekend.
Has Paul Feig made a movie without her?
Yeah, he did. Did he do The Boy in the Striped Pajamas? Was that his?
Oh, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
You remember that one?
That was that Holocaust?
Yeah.
The PG-13 Holocaust movie.
And, of course, he created the fabulous...
He did that?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
But it also, co-created and directed most of the episodes of Freaks and Geeks.
Yes, where he's really...
That's his masterpiece.
I got you.
At number four is Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice with $9 million. Warner Brothers Pictures... film had another solid weekend at the global box office in 68 territories as the superhero epic added another $57.4 million and has earned $783.5 million to date. This lands the film a spot on the list of top 10 grossing superhero movies worldwide of all time.
I wonder on the what it is on the regular, like it's probably in the top 20 grossing films of all time, you think, by now, or 25?
Probably.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Followed by the summer, like we previously said, Suicide Squad. Disney's Zootopia was number five with $8.2 million and has a worldwide total now of $882 million. So it's closing in on that $900 million mark.
Oh, yeah.
Criminal, starring Kevin Costner, reviewed by Tom Stockman,
brought
in $5.8 million from 2,683 locations and finished in sixth place.
That is low for that many theaters, huh? 2,600, you said. Oh, my goodness.
It's got quite a cast.
And lots of
commercials.
The names
would have drawn people.
Well, those, I mean, I'm glad it made it into the top 12, never mind sixth place. I mean, it had so much competition. And in seventh place is My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 with $3.3 million. The sequel has made $52 million domestically and $79 million worldwide.
So it's in the profit mode now. It looks like it cost very little.
Yeah. Miracles from Heaven was number 8 this weekend with $1.9 million, followed by God's Not Dead 2 in the ninth spot with $1.7 million.
Those are
two Christian-based.
Yeah. I don't know why this may be diverting a little bit, but they had a superb parody of the religious films on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
The trailer for God's, was it God is a Boob Man?
Yes.
Was the name of it?
Yeah.
And with the woman of faith being forced to bake a cake for the gays. So you go in there and you bake that cake for us. Very funny.
Yeah, I think so too. Climbing the number 10 spot is Eye in the Sky from Bleecker Street. The film added $1.6 million to its already $13.1 million domestic total. The film will be available, was just announced, on digital HD June 14th and on Blu-ray and DVD June 28th from Universal Pictures Home Entertainment.
Yeah, I think there's going to be an awards push for that at the end of the year.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, it's got some strong performances. Mm-hmm.
At number 11 was a Fathom Events film.
Oh.
Met Opera, Roberto Devereaux.
Oh, my.
That came in at $1.5 million. We are in such a lull, it seems like. It seems like we've been in this, like, lull for... I mean, that made the top 12.
Yeah, well.
And who doesn't like opera?
Yeah.
I love the Grand Ole Opry.
I've just never heard one of those Fathom Event films cracking the 12, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Every once in a while it will, yeah.
And finishing in 12th place was Hardcore Henry with $1.5
million. Also a Fathom Event.
I don't know if, I guess neither of you went to see a movie this weekend. I was at a theater Friday night, and at the ticket booth, they actually had a little notice pasted on there saying, Hardcore Henry is shot with one camera, you know, with like a GoPro mm-hmm. system, and you may feel nausea and all that. So I would guess that a lot of people are running back and, you know,
saying,
wanting their
give
money
my
back.
Money
and
back,
like,
exactly.
I'm sick. I can't take this anymore.
They're probably tired of cleaning up the vomit aisles.
Coming to U.S. cinemas this coming weekend, April 22nd, is The Huntsman: Winter's War, which has already grossed $43 million overseas. Mm. That stars Chris Hemsworth, Jessica Chastain, and Charlize Theron. Another film is Miles
and Emily Blunt.
And Emily Blunt.
Oh,
exactly. Thank
you. I wouldn't forget her. Yeah.
Too bad they couldn't get a cast for this.
I'm kind of looking forward to this one. Oh. Miles Ahead also opens, starring Don Cheadle. That's one we were speaking about. That is passion project. And Elvis and Nixon with Kevin Spacey and Michael Shannon.
Elvis and Nixon.
Now, Jim saw that.
I saw that. That opens this Friday. Yeah, does that open this Friday here?
Yes,
it does here.
Yeah. Okay, so we can
and
talk about that.
And what's the movie with Colin Farrell where people turn into animals?
The Lobster?
I think that opens Friday here. That's
really?
I think.
Well, the poster is up over at the
Tivoli.
So.
And I was talking to Pete, the manager, and he said, that opens on the 22nd. But it wasn't on our email we got from Hugh, so maybe it was Pete was mistaken.
I was just going to look at that.
Because it just seems like it. You know, everything is getting jammed into this
weekend. But he said it was kind of a last-minute edition.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, let's start reviewing these movies. I've got 7 movies listed here to review, and I've only seen one. So we're going to be listening to Jim talk a lot.
Oh,
Jim,
no.
You poor people. Let's start with Barbershop, the final cut.
Not the final cut. It's the next cut.
The next cut. I'm sorry.
Although I swear I think I might have referred to it as the new cut.
Tom's trying to put the nail in the coffin on that series already.
No. This is like the stake has been pulled out of the vampire's heart because this has been dormant for 12 years. The last Barbershop film
was
in 2004, although they had a spinoff with Beauty Shop with Queen Latifah the following year.
Me and Angie, we was both struggling to keep our shops afloat, so we had to work together.
Saved us both.
I can't believe y'all put all that money on your heads and then don't be having the money for your rent.
With this hair and this booty,
damn,
it's like walking around with a black Amex.
But yeah, I thought I remembered that there was a television show also, and it was on Showtime Premium Cable in 2004, 2005. Well, there were a couple of the people from the movie series in there. Of course, Ice Cube did not star in it as Calvin. And this is set in the south side of Chicago. And I guess the first barbershop, I mentioned in my review, I'd not seen any of the previous barbershop films. That I guess in the first one, Ice Cube's character Calvin took over his dad's old barbershop business. Mm-hmm. And it's 2016 now, and it's unisex. There's a section, they've divided it in half. Mm-hmm. There's a section for a beauty shop people that's run by Regina Hall's character.
But is Queen Latifah over there?
No, Queen Latifah's not over there, but Nicki Minaj is there as the bombshell Drea.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes, yes. Now, the main difference is the area surrounding the barbershop on the south side of Chicago is a war zone. It's almost next door to the Chicago we saw in Chirac a few months ago.
But does everybody speak in rhyme?
No, they don't. Although Cedric the Entertainer is still doing his bumbling, buffoonish character Eddie, and that was my main problem with the film. They're trying to get out this message about stopping the violence in the South Side of Chicago, but you've got the characters inside there doing these sort of caricatures. It's tough to take it seriously when 1 minute Eddie is doing an impression of George Jefferson. And the next minute, some kids getting killed outside.
Anything for a laugh.
but the laughs are bouncing up against the serious subject matter. It's just not didn't work.
Doesn't
for
work.
Me.
Now, I think I could be wrong, but didn't Ice Cube write and direct the first two?
That is a good question. I think he did. I certainly know.
But
he's
this one
executive
is not
producer.
Written or directed by.
No. I think he's not in the credits besides being a producer of it. Uh-huh. But the other big addition in this one is Common. Who plays a character?
Oscar winner
Common. Yes, yes. I was just blanking on his. Rashid is his character. Now he's married to the character played by Eve, who I believe is another rap star, who was introduced in the last barbershop, and they're married, and they're a blended family. He's got an older kid who's about to get into the gangs, and they're raising a younger kid. Common's character does a lot of pontificating. I was talking about the serious subject matter. At one point, he actually almost reads off a list of people we've heard about in the news from the last couple of years getting gunned down. It just, I don't know, like I say, it just doesn't mesh with the rest of the atmosphere in the film. And his own subplot, he's married to Eve in it, but Nicki Minaj's Drea has set her sights on him. And his wife is convinced that they're fooling around, and he's trying to push her aside. And she's trying to get squeezed into smaller and smaller outfits as the film goes on.
Did they make jokes about her booty?
Oh, there's a scene where they're recording a video to stop the violence, and in order to get people to watch, they've got her, well, it was supposed to be her. You just see her from the backside twerking furiously. She is just twerking up a storm there in the background.
It's probably Miley Cyrus acting as a body double.
Well, I tell you, it had to be a lot of padding there, but it just kind of silly
preachy,
a lot of it. And Calvin himself, he's concerned about his kid who's a young basketball star who's about 16 or 17, and he's starting to drift into the gangs, and so Calvin is looking at relocating to the north side. And actually, one of the barbers is played by the great J.B. Smooth from Curb Your Enthusiasm. He plays a character called One Stop. And not only does he rent out a barber chair, but he's selling pharmaceuticals. He's into real estate. He's brokering the deal for him.
I remember that character in Curb Your Enthusiasm. His last name was Black.
Yeah.
That guy's funny. I've seen him in a couple other movies.
Yeah, he's very funny in it. Cedric gets a few laughs in it, but... I don't know. It just a lot of times they're just kind of standing around the barbershop, listening to some speech by somebody, and it's like, And they bring in a couple of a real NBA star at the end of it, and they've got an Obama lookalike at the very end for the end credits. But it didn't do much for me, really. I think that the subject matter is so serious, it's really tough to have it in this setting. I think or react to it in it.
All right. So you gave it 2 out of 5 stars in your review that posted at WeAreMovieGeeks.com last Thursday night. So Jim doesn't really recommend Barbershop. The Next Cut.
Another film set in Chicago like The Boss, but shot in Atlanta. For gosh sakes.
Yeah, they're getting some great tax cuts.
I wouldn't want to shoot a movie in Chicago.
It's not quite a war zone.
Let's move on. We got lots of movies to review. Jim also saw Elvis Meets Nixon.
Everybody loves Elvis.
Call me.
He could really help us with the youth vote. He would also like a badge.
A what?
I would like to go undercover as a federal agent. I've been in 31 major motion pictures. That makes me an expert in costume and disguise.
I could infiltrate the communists, and then I'd bust them all.
Let's do this thing.
An undercover rock and roller. Sounds ludicrous.
I can supply my own firearm.
We talked about this last week, and I had watched the trailer, and I thought Michael Shannon was horribly miscast as Elvis. I said he looked like the scary Elvis. Jim, was Michael Shannon able to overcome this casting issue that I had with him?
Well, I think it depends. I think after about 10 minutes or so, I establish in my mind that he was Elvis in it, and everyone around reacts, oh my gosh, it's the king, it's Elvis, and that's part of the humor in it, is seeing the Elvis pop up in these everyday situations. He's buying his own airline ticket at the start of the film. Michael Shannon is trying to do a little Southern accent and trying to do a little falsetto to his voice to bring it up a little bit. But you know, you never really fully buy that he's Elvis. I think Kevin Spacey has an easier time as Nixon. Mm-hmm. Although, as far as movie Nixons go, I don't think I'd put him up anywhere near Anthony Hopkins or even Dan Hedaya, who was so wonderful as Nixon in Dick with Michelle Williams and Kirsten Dunst. I saw that a little bit of that over the weekend again, and he's terrific in it. But certainly better than John Cusack in The Butler.
No.
And Lee Daniels, The Butler, excuse me.
That was the one that Robert Altman directed.
Philip Baker Hall.
I can't remember the name of it. It was like a monologue.
It was like a one man show.
It's considered to be really, really good, though.
Spacey is probably closest to Dan Aykroyd from the early Saturday Night Live sketches.
That
hunched over and just like, what is he doing? What's going on? And dropping as many F bombs as he can.
So, how's the movie?
Movie is kind of slight. It is, I mentioned SNL. It's like an SNL sketch, kind of stretched to it's barely an hour and a half or so. Mm-hmm. The main thing is, I guess one of Elvis's Memphis Mafia people is now relocated to Los Angeles. And he's working at Paramount in the editing department. And Elvis calls him back into action because he's watching on his multiple TVs footage of the protests and all the stuff going on in the news. Of course, if he's watching on his multiple TV, he has to get out his pistol and shoot one of the TVs. That has to happen in all Elvis movies now. Yeah. Even though, as far as I know, he did that when Robert Goulet or Tom Jones was on the screen and he shot it.
I think it was Tom Jones.
That's kind of disappointing because the director is Lisa Johnson, and I really liked her earlier film called Return from 2011. It was a small little independent film, but it had Linda Cardellini in it and Michael Shannon and John Slattery. So I was kind
the
of
return.
Yeah, it was just called Return.
Return.
And it was she was a soldier trying to get back into everyday life and having a struggle with it. So I was hoping because women directors, and I liked her other things too.
Well, I like all those three actors, so I'm surprised that slipped under the radar. Yeah. Johnny Knoxville shows up later on as another member of the Memphis Mafia who's able to help Elvis. But Elvis is watching the stuff on TV and then decides that he needs to be an agent at large for the government, so he can rat out the radicals and stop the drug pushers and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to him that he gets a badge. So he goes to Washington D.C. and everyone's like, well, "What's going on? What is he?" You know. And Colin Hanks plays one of the associates that helps out. His name Luke Peters? Is from St. Louis and played Quicksilver. Alex Pettifor is the Memphis Mafia guy.
But what I want to know is, how is Tate Donovan as Haldeman?
He's okay. He's in it very little, unfortunately.
Okay.
What about is Priscilla in it?
Priscilla's mentioned, but you never see her in it. And there's a scene of Elvis going to I think the FBI and saying, you know, you're going to swear me in. He says, well, we don't do that here. Finally, I forget which of Elvis's assistants Colin Hanks plays, but he convinces Nixon to meet with him. Nixon didn't want to have anything to do with him. And he said, no, you need to be more popular with the young people. And you know, Elvis is popular. The young people, the old, everybody here. Mm-hmm. So you really need this. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly about that famous photo we've seen of them shaking hands in the Oval Office.
Okay. So you're reviewing Elvis B. Stixon for Thursday night?
I don't know if I am or Kate is.
Right. How many stars are you going to give it if you're reviewing?
You know, of course, I like the actors so much. I think I'd give it 3, maybe 3.5 stars. Right. They're entertaining.
Do you know who also did the screenplay?
Oh, that's right. Barry Elwes.
Princess Bride.
Princess Bride.
He wrote the screenplay? Weird.
Right. He's listed it. He's credited.
He's one of the producers also. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So Jim Sorta recommends Elvis Meets Nixon. Criminal opened Friday. I reviewed that over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I gave it a whopping 3 out of 5 stars.
That's whopping, folks.
Who are you?
They stopped your husband in my head. They're looking for details that he knew before he was killed.
Washington, Berlin, Beijing would be graveyards.
Can you feel what Billy felt?
He loves you so much.
I even said in my review, at the end of my review, I said a generous 3 out of 5 stars. It is something of a guilty pleasure, and it is kind of a dumb movie. But I thought it was kind of a good time. It's about, it's actually Ryan Reynolds. We were making fun of Ryan Reynolds last week, saying he needs to stay away from these body transference movies. But this is actually his third one, and we had forgotten about The Change-Up with Jason Bateman, and he swapped bodies.
They were taking a whiz in a fountain together.
Yeah. In this one, Ryan Reynolds plays Billy Pope. These guys have such great movie names in this movie. And he's a CIA agent working over in London, and it starts with this kind of pretty good car chase and chase through the streets of London, and he's got this satchel full of cash that he stashes, and then this evil villain Heimdall, played by Jordy Mala, finally corners him, captures him, and murders him by sticking a cattle prod down his throat, and his cheeks sort of glow like a kid does when he puts a flashlight in his mouth. So that's the end of Bill Pope. But Ryan Reynolds, that's it for him. About 10 minutes in, he's gone, baby.
Oh, he's a lucky fellow.
So his boss, Quaker Wells.
Quaker.
Played, just overacted by Mr. Gary Oldman, who's kind of becoming the new Al Pacino as far as screaming and rolling his eyes and spitting his lines. He's quite funny. He decides that they need to transfer some information from Billy Pope's mind because he has knowledge of this hacker terrorist known as the Dutchman, played by Michael Pitt. So they need to transfer his mind, so they find Dr. Franks, played by Tommy Lee Jones, who for the past 18 years has been working on this mind swap technology. And he goes, I won't be ready for humans for another 5 years, he says. So it's a 23-year experiment by this old guy. So anyways, Quaker Wells says, well, we have to do it now. So Dr. Frank says, well, we have to use this only this one subject that I have. And that is, of course, Jericho Stewart, played by Kevin Costner. And he's introduced in this cell with this beard, and he's in solitary confinement, still chained up.
Jericho is his name. He's got a big collar chain on him and everything.
Yeah, and he's in the U.S., so they have to fly him to fly him to London, even though time is running out.
And as I understand, he's the only candidate because he had some damage done to him as a kid, so his frontal lobe is kind of open.
Something
so he's
like
the only guy that can do it. So there is a reason why they're getting this hardened criminal for it.
I guess. And he has no emotion. He has no conscience or something. So he kills people. So they do this experiment and put Pope's mind into Jericho's body, but Jericho pretends like the experiment has failed, so they're hauling Jericho back to prison. And what does he do? Does he take like a hanger and he kills the guy driving the car, taking him back to prison? So that causes a car crash, so he pulls the guy out of the other car and sticks him in the car that he was in, and then lights the thing on fire, so everybody dies. So he escapes, and he has this image of this bag of cash that Bill Pope had hidden. And he was supposed to give to the Dutchman. It's all very confusing.
So he decides
he's going to go find this bag of cash and then take off and start a new life or something like that. And then he goes and visits Billy Pope's widow, played by Gal Gadot.
Get us out from under, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and she's not given much to do.
No.
So in the meanwhile, this Heimdall guy, Jordy Mala, is looking for Jericho. And of course, the CIA is looking for Jericho, and everybody's looking for Jericho to get this information out of his head, but then that's been transplanted. It's all very silly. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I really didn't quite understand what Heimdall, who's introduced as, Spanish anarchist.
That's right.
Spanish, that's how it's...
When he's being interviewed by Piers Morgan on television.
Yeah. He's got his assistant who played.
Oh yes, who played the female Kryptonian who was out killing people, Farah Ul. It's played by Anshka Trave.
Uh-huh. And she's pretty good, actually.
She's more interesting. You did mention one of Gary Oldman's assistants is played by the gorgeous Alice Eve, who's criminally underused in it. Yeah. Has nothing to do but kind of fret and be shot up.
Yeah, she goes, "Oh, I've been shot." That's her last line. I've been shot. It's not a very good movie, but like I say, it's a good time. Kevin Costner is really funny. I don't even know if he read the script. There was no concept of how much of Pope's memory was in his brain. I don't think he even grasped, you know, one scene, you know, he's a step ahead of everybody and he's really smart. And the next scene, he's acting like he's mildly retarded or something. And he's growling and scowling and cursing and he's killing all these innocent people left and right. There's one scene where he goes into this diner and he just busts some guy in the face to take his sandwich. And then there's a chase where he's killing these London policemen left and right.
And all of a sudden he can speak fluent French and Spanish and all that. Yeah.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Oh, I know.
But it's fun. We made fun of the movie Last Selfless, which kind of similar, and it had another brain swap thing with Ryan Reynolds. And that was really terrible. And for some reason, this new movie, Criminal, probably isn't much better, but for some reason, I had a lot more fun with it.
Well, I can't understand why Costner was cast in this. I mean, he's definitely into his 60s. Yeah. I have a feeling this might have been written with Jason Statham or something like that in mind. And then how much, you know, how many other people took a pass on it, I wonder. I don't know why. Maybe he's thinking that he should do more action stuff to balance that off with his stuff like Black and White. And
this was from director Ariel Roman, right, who directed
The Iceman,
which I really liked, with Michael Shannon and Chris Evans and James Franco. That's really good. So
it's very well directed. Actually, the opening chase scene is very exciting. It's just a weird, convoluted script and not a great movie. I gave it 3 out of 5, which was, like I say, it was kind of generous, but I thought it was a lot of fun. Let's move on, though. We've got...
Should I tell you what the mystery movie was?
Jim saw a mystery movie. Okay,
yeah,
Jim.
I went to see Criminal on Friday, and then when that was over with, I marched back up to the box office and I said, "Give me one ticket for Meet the Blacks."
Oh, you did. Why didn't you just sneak in and see it without paying?
Tom, I would never do that.
I would never do that.
No.
All the free publicity you give to AMC. So you saw Meet the Blacks, and it was a spoof of The Purge, right?
Yes, it's a spoof of The Purge. It opens up with Snoop Dogg, who's one of the producers of it, in whiteface, playing like a hillbilly character.
So racist.
Extolling the virtues of The Purge. They actually call it The Purge. And all during it, I'm sitting, don't they have that phrase copyrighted?
Maybe they bought it. Maybe they bought the rights to use it.
I can't imagine, because it's such a low-budget thing. It's about Mike Epps is this fella in Chicago who's does wiring systems for security systems for different people, including a drug dealer. And, of course, the drug dealer gets busted, so he goes in and steals his money and all of his pot and packs up the family and moves to Beverly Hills, that is.
Oh,
and so
my.
They get this opulent place. It's he and his kids. He's got a 17-year-old daughter who's on the phone all the time with her boyfriend, who's called Mr. Freeze. They call him the Iceman and all that. And his young son, who's about 8 or 9, who thinks he's a vampire and he's always losing his plastic fangs. Mm-hmm. And his incredibly attractive second wife, their stepmother, who was Latina. Let's see, I wrote down her name, Zuli Haneo, and she's quite lovely. And, of course, when the purge does happen, everyone, goes to their house, including the people that he ripped off in Chicago. And he's actually got a cousin living with him named Cronut, who's lusting after his new bride also. And it's kind of a mess at the end. It's funny for about the first 20 minutes, and then it wears out its welcome really fast.
Were you in the theater by yourself?
No, actually, there was about 2 dozen people there for it.
No, it was in the top 10 last week. It's been, I think it was the third week it's been in town, but so it probably made a profit. It probably didn't cost much to make. I kind of want to see it. Maybe it comes to the dollar.
It would have been a good sketch on Mad TV if that were still around. Yeah. But like I say, it's kind of tiresome. They bring in Mike Tyson for a cameo at the end of it, and it's just kind of silly.
All right. So Jim saw Meet the Blacks, but it didn't get reviewed at our site.
Yeah, they wouldn't show it to us, surprisingly.
And Jim sees everything. All right. Michelle and I must have stayed home last week. The only movie I saw all last week was Criminal. Jim saw Miles Ahead.
Miles Davis. My name's Dave Braden, Rolling Stone magazine.
I'm here to do your comeback story.
Okay, move back a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't send people to my house.
You have new material.
My material. My session tape.
You're under contract here.
We actually own that tape.
Miles!
You own? How much money you got?
You saw it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I did. I guess I'm going to be reviewing that this Friday for the site. This is the biography of Miles Davis, but it's similar to other recent biographies like Spielberg's Lincoln, in that it just really focuses in on a certain period of time in this person's life. You never get to see the young Miles as you saw the young Ray Charles and Ray. You never see him as a young boy growing up learning.
I don't think Miles Davis ever was a young boy.
Learning to play the horn, but you do see a couple of the flashback sequences set in the 1950s. The bulk of the film is set in the late 1970s when Columbia Records is wanting Miles's new works, his new album, and he's just kind of sitting on them, and he's spending most of his days getting high in his opulent apartment. And I don't know if it's in Brooklyn, but it's somewhere in the New York City, Manhattan area. And Ewan McGregor is this rock and roll writer, claims he's from Rolling Stone, but is established that he's just kind of a freelance guy trying to get an exclusive interview with Miles. And there's a whole deal about how Miles has these recording sessions he's been doing for the album on this master tape. And what do you know, Michael Stuhlberg, who's representing another young jazz artist, steals the big reel-to-reel tape, and there's a big chase through the streets of New York with them shooting at each other and going to clubs and scoring more drugs and coke and all that. And there are occasional flashbacks to Miles' time in the 50s when he was more clean-cut, and he's involved with a dancer, a Broadway classical dancer, who is played by Imaisti Hornaldi, who plays a character named Frances Taylor. I can pronounce that much better. But it's about how she kind of drifts away from his life. And doesn't really. I know that Miles, up until his death, was married, I think, to Cicely Tyson, and she's never introduced in the film, I believe so.
She's like 92 and is still on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw her in an episode of To Tell the Truth from the 60s last week. It was very odd. But yeah, they never address that. It's pretty much all set in, like 78, 79, a lot of disco stuff in it. And
but is Don Cheadle worthy of the Oscar they're going to give him?
They're not going to give him an Oscar, no. No.
What?
There's a chance he could get a Golden Globe nomination if they divide him up and put him in the comedy category, because some of the stuff he says in it is pretty funny, but it's mostly him just kind of, talking like this, and what are you doing? And it just kind of gets a little tiresome after a while. And the whole who's got the music thing is kind of wears out its welcome also by the midpoint. Yeah.
Ewan McGregor, his role is pretty big then, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's pretty much a two-man show through a lot of it, just the two of them talking or driving around or whatever.
If
you're a fan.
Director of the movie, so it's more of a passion project.
Yeah, he co-wrote it also, and he's at the end of the film during the end credits. He's actually performing live in a concert with people like Herbie Hancock,
really?
And that's you can see that he's got a lot of passion for it. But I wish it was better. I wish it was more compelling.
So you're going to be reviewing that for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. How many stars are you going to give it?
I'm maybe going to give it 3, 3.5, something like that.
All right, let's move along, or we're going to run out of time because we still got two more movies to review. Hologram for a King. Stars Tom Hanks.
Hey, Dad, where are you?
I'm in Saudi Arabia. Oh! I'm pitching holographic system to the king.
Morning.
Excuse me.
You the driver?
Driver, guide, hero.
So, where are we going?
The king's Acropolis, trade.
There's nothing happening there.
It's full steam ahead.
See for yourself.
Howdy.
Jim, you saw that the other day.
I saw that.
What the heck is that about?
That is pretty entertaining, I think, as far as Tom Hanks' recent works. It's not up to Captain Phillips, but it's certainly a cut above Larry Crown. That's for certain. He's a fella. He's representing a salesman for this high-tech company.
Is this a true story?
No. It's based on a novel by Dave Eggers, who worked on the screenplay with director Tom Twyker. Twyker, is that his last name?
That's right, yeah.
Who co-directed Cloud Atlas. Was it Run
Lola? Cannonball Run was his German film. Yeah.
And Tom is having kind of a late midlife crisis, I guess, you know, mid-late crisis. His wife is divorcing him, and he's trying to provide money for his daughter's education, her college years, and all that. So he's really important. He's going to make this sale. And he's flying out from the U.S. to Saudi Arabia. And this king in Saudi Arabia is going to build this city in the middle of the desert, and he wants to have sort of an amusement center, and so they want to set up the hologram system. And when he gets there, the tech people are already there, but they got no internet. They, they're out in the middle of nowhere in a tent. So he's trying to deal with all these people. He's kind of getting brushed off by all the king's execs. They don't know when he's going to come visit so that they can do the little power play presentation to him. But Hanks is very good at it. He's got a little growth on his back, which is concerning him. So he does end up going to a local hospital, and he's treated by a woman doctor played by Sarita Chaudhuri, I believe is how you pronounce her name, who may be best known for Missouri Masala. I think we last saw her in Learning to Drive playing Ben Kingsley's bride. And she's very good at it, and they strike up a friendship that leads to an actual romance, and it's very sweet. They're trying to keep it under wraps because everything is so suppressed there in Saudi Arabia.
Is this a comedy?
It's a comedy. Right. There's some dramatic stuff in it. Yeah. Some of the comedy is provided by the driver that Tom Hanks hires. Tom keeps on missing the shuttle from the hotel, from the Hyatt, to the place in the desert. So he hires this driver who's played by Alexander Black, and he's very funny in it. He's concerned that the husband of some woman he's fooling around with is after him. So he actually unhooks or disconnects the engine, so when Tom climbs in the car, he has to remind himself to go open up the hood and reconnect the engine because he's afraid it's going to blow up. So
you're reviewing Hologram for King?
Yeah, I'm going to give it at least 4 stars. But I think it's very entertaining.
Hanks and Twyker previously worked on...
And Cloud Atlas.
And Cloud Atlas, okay. Which... Yeah. Right. Yeah, I
was hit and miss.
Liked.
Yeah, I love
exactly.
Cloud Atlas. I love
there was
Cloud
a lot
Atlas.
Of
yeah.
it.
Good. Okay, let's move on. Let's do a quick review of Jungle Book.
If you can't learn to run with the pack, one of these days you'll be someone's dinner.
I can't help but notice there's this strange odor today. Man is forbidden!
Jungle Book, but Jim saw Jungle Book. Jim saw everything. I'm going to go see Jungle Book this Saturday with my kids, and it made $103 million, and it's getting really, really good reviews. Jim, did you like it?
I enjoyed that. I don't think there was a big need to turn the animated film into live action, but it's...
That's Disney's staple now these days.
Well, now they'll probably do Dumbo. They've been talking about that for the last couple of years.
They need to do Song of the South as live action.
Oh, but, good luck with that.
But it has Mowgli is live action guy, and as I understand the young actor, I forget his name there, he's very good. I think this is his first film.
He looks just like the kid from the cartoon.
Yeah, he's got the little red diaper and all that. He's running around. And
Zardos.
Yeah, and it's all against green screen. All the jungle, everything in it is pretty much computer generated, including all the animals.
So it's not really live action then, is it?
No, a lot of people are wondering if it's going to be considered in the animation category.
Which I wonder how Warner Brothers movie, because remember, they've also got one coming out.
That Andy Serkis is doing.
Exactly. And he's directing.
Another Jungle Book?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. The book is, they can't have the songs in it, but the
right.
book
it's
itself
more,
is
public
domain.
It's
public domain.
Yeah,
Rudyard
Kipling's novel is definitely.
Yeah.
They're calling it Jungle Book?
Yeah.
Or maybe they'll call it Rudyard Kipling's Jungle Book set it aside there. But it doesn't have all the songs from the original film. Yeah.
But it has a great, I've heard it has a great score by John Debney.
It does. They utilize some of the songs as background music for some sequences. Mm-hmm. I would say the 3D is worth the upgrade because they do some really neat stuff with it, especially with the character Ka, the snake. Yeah. Because when she's hypnotizing Mowgli, her head is sort of stationary in the center of the screen, and her body is sort of undulating behind it, which really looks great in 3D.
You saw that on 3D IMAX, didn't you?
I did. And I had my dentist place last week. The dental assistant asked if she should take her 4-year-old grandson to it, and I said, well, it is PG, but it is rough and scary. Idris Elba is terrifying in some scenes. Sheer Khan, and he loves to jump into the camera lens. Yeah. Like I say, Scarlett Johansson is Ka. You know, she's just seconds away from gobbling up Mowgli in that scene. And it's really well done. And I disagree with Michael Hafner. I like Christopher Walken as King Louie. I think that scene works.
He didn't think the
scene with King Louie worked. He sort of does a spoken version of "I Want to Be Like You."
Okay, so Jim recommends Jungle Book, and I'll let you know what I think next week. Also, this week we get to see Huntsman Winter's War.
If it's the Snow White tale you're looking for, discover the story that came before.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?
You are my queen.
Boy, that's the sequel to what, Snow White and the Huntsman?
Well, as I understand, it's a prequel/sequel.
Prequel/sequel. All right, I'm reviewing that for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. That stars Chris Hemsworth and Emily Blunt and Charlize Theron and
Jessica Chastain. Oh, don't leave her out.
Okay.
She shares a birthday with me.
Okay. Well,
that little ravishing redhead.
We'll review that next Monday. Also, there's a movie opening here in town, a horror movie called The Invitation. I don't know a whole lot about it. Apparently it played at St. Louis International Film Festival, but I missed it, and that opens Friday only at the Chase Park Plaza Cinema. The director is a woman named Karen Kusama, and she will be there Saturday night at the 7:30 show and Sunday afternoon at the 2:30 show, and she will do a Q&A, and our friend Andy Trifenbeck will be moderating that Q&A. So that is The Invitation, and Steve Trunchek will be reviewing that for We Are Movie Geeks. Look for his review Thursday night. Okay, local stuff. Let's talk about local stuff this weekend. Midnight's at the Tivoli, the best movie of last year, Mad Max Fury Road. That'll be midnight at the Tivoli, Friday and Saturday night, and I will have Mad Max trivia, and I'm going to go down and have some stuff. They're giving me a bunch of Keanu stuff to pass out.
I'm guessing that's the 2D version of it?
Yeah, I don't think they have the 3D at the Tivoli anymore.
Oh, okay.
They did for a while, but I think they got rid of it. I think they gave it to a different Landmark theater. Also, I can say that, remember our friends that did the Magic Smoking Monkey Theater people?
They do the live plays based on classic films.
Year they take like a classic film and they turn it into a stage play. I took my daughter to see, they did all 7 Harry Potter films. They called it the 90-minute Harry Potter.
Oh, wow.
And we saw they did a Twilight Zone and Super Friends.
Vincentennial, they did the Abominable Dr. Fry's,
which was terrific. Usually these things are really funny. The one that we saw, the Twilight Zone, wasn't one of their better productions. Anyways, what I can announce is that this year in June, they are doing all 4 Mad Max movies as a stage play.
I don't know, but they're
really funny. I mean, it's like kind of like Monty Python style humor, and I'll probably have some more information on that. This weekend over at Webster University is a presentation of the Brothers Quay. The Brothers Quay are American identical twins who work in London and are stop motion animators, Stephen and Timothy Quay. They are showing 3 of their masterpieces, In Absentia, The Comb, and Street of Crocodiles. And then there'll be a short about the Quay brothers made by Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
And that's all this Friday night over at Webster University's Moore Auditorium. And this is a 35mm presentation. So I think it sounds like something that sounds like really, really interesting. I may have to go.
Well, I went to their presentation this past Saturday night. They had an evening of Looney Tunes with animation historian Jerry Beck. They didn't charge admission for this one. I don't know if they're doing that for the Quay Brothers program.
No, Quay Brothers, they are charging. It's Saturday night, too. I said Friday night, but it's Friday and Saturday. It might be Sunday night, too. I don't know. I'll put something at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. So how was that thing you went to?
Oh, it was very entertaining. Mr. Beck came up. I don't know if our listeners are familiar with his work. They should be if they're into animation. He's done several coffee table type books about the making of SpongeBob and different feature films. One of my favorite books of his is The 50 Best Cartoons of All Time, where he lists the best cartoon shorts going from the silent era to modern times.
Oh, yeah.
He mostly focused on the Looney Tunes. He had several slides that had early magazine ads from Leon Schlesinger, who started the animation company at Warner Brothers, the Termite Terrace people, and lots of photos of Chuck Jones and Friz Freleng and Bob Clampett as young men in Tex Avery.
So he had a PowerPoint presentation or something?
Had a PowerPoint presentation, maybe lasted about 10-15 minutes. Uh-huh. Then he delved into the cartoon options themselves that he picked, and he was probably leaning a little more towards Bob Clampett, and he had several by him, a couple by Tex Avery, several.
So
by
he showed
Chuck
these
Jones.
Cartoons in their entirety.
In their entirety, starting off with "You Ought to Be in Pictures." He even had a couple of private snafu cartoons, the ones that were made for the military in the 1940s that weren't shown in theaters here in the States, that are pretty risque. You know, they like to say "he double toothpicks" a lot in them. But yeah, he concluded with, I think, Daffy Duck Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century, Feed the Kitty, and what is considered by many to be the pinnacle of Warner's animation, What's Opera Doc, which is still pretty entertaining, although I like Rabbit of Seville a little more myself.
Did they have a big crowd?
Yeah, they had a couple of dozen people there. We all had a good time, and I got to spend a little time with Mr. Beck afterwards and shooting the breeze about different things and about his frustration over some of the studios having these restored versions of their classic shorts and just not wanting to do anything with them. And I was like, there's a market for them. There people would want to see them. And he's talking about trying to get some restored prints from different studios and maybe bring them around on a tour. And I said, I hope that St. Louis is one of your stops because we'll come out for it.
The WebSU film series does some really remarkable events.
Yeah, over the years at Webster, I saw Chuck Jones there. I saw Frank Thomas, Nolly Johnson, Leonard Maltin. So great animation people. Ray Harryhausen. And of course.
I was there for that. Did you see Iron Giant Friday night?
No, I didn't. I wasn't able to make it over for that because I was seeing my double feature, Criminal and Meet the Blacks that night.
So you saw Meet the Blacks instead of Iron Giant.
I'm going to get that restored or new version of that when that comes out here shortly.
Yeah. So lots going on in town. Also, Fathom Events Sunday and a week from Thursday is on the waterfront, and that is at 2:30 in the afternoon and 7 p.m. I'll be putting something up on We Are Movie Geeks. Maybe I already did. Actually, I already did.
Yeah, I think so.
That's right. So that's Sunday and next Thursday, and this week starts Q-Fest here in St. Louis. Q stands for queer. This is run by our friend Chris Clark over at Cinema St. Louis. And they do a bunch of gay and lesbian-themed films. The only one I've seen is called I Love You Both, and that was made by St. Louis native Doug Archibald. And he and his sister, Kristen Archibald, play twins, although they're not twins in real life. They are siblings in real life. And get this wacky plot development. They both meet a guy named Andrew who's bisexual, and they both start dating the same guy. Crazy, I know. But it's actually pretty well written, and I will be posting an interview with young Doug Archibald, writer and director of I Love You Both, later this week at We Are Movie Geeks. There's also an interesting documentary called Upstairs Inferno. Oh, by the way, I Love You Both plays Sunday, April 24th at 5:30, and again at 8 o'clock. And they're only doing this at the High Point Backlot.
Oh, that's right,
which only seats 44.
So get your tickets quickly.
Yeah, there'll probably be a lot of sellouts. And then, like I said, The Upstairs Inferno is a documentary that plays Monday at 9 o'clock about an arsonist who set fire to a gay bar in New Orleans back in 1973. And the result was the largest gay mass murder in U.S. history. It's not a whole lot is known about this.
Yeah, what year was that you said?
1973.
73, that recent. Wow.
I think like 30 poor gay fellows up in this bar perished in this fire.
Oh, my
goodness. So this is a documentary about that. And there's all kinds of other gay-themed films. And Chris always does a great job with Q-Fest. I haven't been in a couple years.
They have quite a lineup. I was looking at... I'm on Cinema St. Louis' site right now. Yeah. So they have a lot of,
Last thing I saw there at the Q-Fest was a couple years ago. I saw that documentary about Divine that was really, really good.
Yeah, did they run the Tab Hunter one also?
Oh, they did. They did last year, I believe, or maybe the year before.
Oh, and the power went out, and they had to reschedule.
Oh, is that right? That's right.
But we gave it
that
a great
That was at the
review.
Tivoli, yeah. And they did one about Greg Louganis, I think, last year, too. So
oh, that
really
one,
documentaries.
That's a really good one. If you like Olympic sports, just to see what he went through is a really... They showed it on HBO as well.
And there was another documentary about a gay porn star.
Oh, that's right, Buck something?
No, not Buck Angel. That was one, but a few years ago I saw Jack somebody, but he married this old lady who was a lounge singer, and it was all about this marriage between this gay porn star and this older woman, and it was really, really fascinating. Mm-hmm. So go check out Q-Fest in St. Louis. Chris Clark, I said, he actually officiated a wedding over the weekend that I went to. Our filmmaking friends Wyatt Weed and Gail Gallagher got married Saturday afternoon, and Chris apparently got his license to marry people, and he did a funny job. And that was a lot of fun. That was a movie-themed wedding, so we can talk about it here at We Are Movie Geeks.
Sounds delightful.
It was. It was great. Mm-hmm. All right. What else can we talk about?
Well, we had a major birthday of a Hollywood superstar, one of my favorites yesterday. Mr. Daffy Duck.
Oh, how old is Daffy?
Oh, Daffy is 79.
He doesn't look a day over 40.
I know. That little black duck is using a little Rogaine or something. Yeah. I don't know. But
a couple of days? I can't go without a shower for that long.
Since when do you take so many showers?
It's the principle. If I'm going to pay rent somewhere, then I want everything to work. You don't pay rent. And I won't. Not until that's fixed. Now where am I supposed to live? They won't let me back at the Y. Long story.
But yeah, it's an interesting character. He kind of, I guess, you know, the success of Donald Duck probably inspired Warners to come up with their own Duck character. And in his first appearances, he's just wild, manic, and out of control. And as the years went on, and he got taken over by directors like Chuck Jones, they turned him into this sort of vain, you know, frustrated guy that's greedy and just thinking of himself. And as I recall Chuck Jones saying, Bugs Bunny is who we'd like to be, Daffy Duck is who we are. Daffy's always chasing after Bugs and trying to stop him, especially in the classic trilogy with Elmer Fudd, the rabbit season, duck season stuff. So fun.
Okay, so happy birthday, Mr. Duck.
Plus,
Mr. Daffy Duck.
We also wanted to briefly mention we finally saw our first trailer, first video for Doctor Strange.
Oh, yes, last Tuesday. That was very impressive.
With a ton of Tilda Swinton as the ancient one.
The bald Tilda Swinton.
Oh, yeah, little flashes of Chiwetelogy 4 and Rachel McAdams. Still not saying who she's playing yet.
No, they're not. And I'm looking on IMDb. I was looking on Disney's publicity site. Nothing. They're not giving us anything.
So it's definitely the first Friday in November, I guess, right? The Friday after Halloween. It'd be great if Halloween was on a Friday. That would be, you know, perfect film for Halloween.
It says October 26, 2016.
Yeah.
That's IMDb's, but that could be something. But no, the trailer was so well cut. Whoever cut that, and you know Scott Derrickson, the director, had, you know, something to do with it.
Oh, yeah. Really looking forward to it. I imagine, I don't know if that trailer went out with Jungle Book or if they're saving that for Civil War. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't. That's a good question.
But you mentioned, I think, before we went on that Civil War's, a lot of the reviews are out now, and it's pretty positive.
A few have said it, like, you know, Marvel's best. But don't they say that about every Marvel movie?
Well, not all. I don't think they said that about Ant-Man, but they said that it was pretty charming. But
because there was the big news. Doctor Strange was big news. We saw a new Suicide Squad trailer. We saw more video from Fantastic Beasts. You know, the new J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, I saw a new Ghostbusters trailer this Friday night that I hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff happening there. They're really kicking into high gear with the summer releases.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess one last thing we can talk about. The Rondo Awards were announced this week. Jim, did you see what won the Rondo Awards?
Well, the only one I knew that won, I believe, was Svengoolie won again, didn't he?
Did he win Best Horror Host?
I believe so, yes.
He may have. Well, good for him. The Rondo Awards are horror movie awards, and there's like 4,000 people to vote on the Rondo Awards, including people like Joe Dante and Quentin Tarantino and Guillermo del Toro. The Evil Dead was a big winner this year. For some reason,
that was the cable show.
Ash vs. the Evil Dead, the TV series, won the best TV show, beating Walking Dead, which has won the past 5 years in a row. But the Bruce Campbell Sam Raimi film, Evil Dead, won best DVD, best restoration, and best DVD extra. So the original Evil Dead won some awards as well. Mad Max Fury Road won a best movie, and it beat Star Wars: The Force Awakens. The book of the year went to Monster Mash, which examines the monster craze in movies, television, music, toys, and models in the 1970s.
Well, that sounds like fun. Do you have that book, Tom?
I do not have that book. I need to get that book.
Okay.
My friend Victoria Price won Monster Kid of the Year. This is kind of a big deal.
It's well deserved.
I won Monster Kid of the Year 4 years ago for directing Vincentennial, the Vincent Price 100th birthday celebration, and they've asked me, actually, to present Victoria with Monster Kid of the Year at the Rondo ceremony, which takes place June 4th in Louisville, Kentucky at the Wonderfest convention. Victoria, of course, wrote a book, a biography of her father back in 1999, and she really wasn't into being a monster kid. She's always a monsters kid, but as far as embracing the whole horror movie convention thing, she really didn't do that until I invited her to Vincent Tenniel. Now she's actually sold her house, and all she does is hit the road and go to these various monster movie conventions and is sort of embracing monster culture. So they gave her Monster Kid of the Year Award for doing that. Sarah Karloff and Ron Chaney and Bela Lugosi Jr. have been doing that kind of thing for years and years. But Victoria Price always sort of resisted it until recently. So good for her.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we can wrap things up now. We will be back next week. We can all talk about Huntsman's Winter's War and The Invitation, and I'm sure there'll be lots of other movies to review and movie stuff to talk about, because there always is. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
And be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, darling.
Hey, 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 hey. Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.